Welcome. You're listening to sermons and talks from Providence Church in Brisbane. We believe that God speaks to us through his word, the Bible. So we pray that as you listen, you'll be encouraged and challenged to love Jesus and live for him. For more information about Providence Church, please visit our website, www.providencechurch.com.au.
Thank you, everyone. If you've got your Bible with you, you might choose to leave it open in front of you at John 4, because we're going to come back to that. I want to start by, in a very similar vein to what that discussion was about. If you're part of a Christian tradition, you are part. You have a tremendous resource in the way that you conceptualize feelings, in the way that you think about feelings. And because of the way you conceptualize those feelings, you have a way to respond to your feelings that is really constructive. So much so that I think if the world knew about the resource that you have, it would be kind of jealous of you, because you have a really constructive resource, a great heritage of personal formation that comes through repeated moments of looking at your emotions and then looking at your heart. I'm here to talk, to ask and answer two questions. One is, what is your heart? And two is, who do you look to get it healed? So the first question there is, what is your heart, or what is on your heart? And the second thing is, well, once I get a sense of that, who do I turn to have my heart healed? But you can already see what I've just slightly moved on. What I've slightly moved on is I moved just away from talking about emotions, and I've just started talking about the heart. And I think from this talk, you'll understand why I do that so succinctly. What the internet calls your emotions is some sort of subjective experience that you get that's kind of psychological and behavioural, and it occurs in response to events that are around you. Doesn't seem like anything's bad about that, does it? Seems pretty good. Say if you go to a coffee shop, and you line up at the coffee shop at the front counter to order a coffee, and what happens to you is you... Oh, but something's happened to my normal sign. That's not Norma, okay? If your name's Norma here, this isn't aimed at you. So this is a normal experience. So what happens to Norma is that she goes to the coffee shop, she lines up, and the waiter or waitress gets distracted, right? And what happens to... I think it works better if her name's Norma, isn't it? Is anyone here named Norma? No? Okay, good. I'll go with Norma. Okay, so Norma lines up the coffee shop and the waiter or waitress gets distracted. And then that's a little bit frustrating, isn't it? So there's a little bit of frustration that comes into her system, into Norma's system, and then it's not particularly intense and then it just goes. Now, that is a mentally healthy way of responding to your environment. And it suits the definition that we've got, which is, oh, it's a subjective internal experience in response to events that's around you. So far, so good. This is good. The internet definition suits as well. The problem is... Oh, Norma's disappeared. That's a shame. The problem is everyone who comes to see me doesn't have Norma's experience. Everyone who comes to see me has more intense emotional reactions. See, the intensity's gone up here? Well beyond normal. And not just that, everyone who comes to see me has longer experiences of negative emotions. This is a generic distress face. I say to people, that you'll observe that there are reasons why I didn't pursue a career in finance. Is because, yeah, that's not too good. But so this is a distress phase. So what happens here is for everyone who comes to see me, the intensity of their reactions goes beyond normal, the duration of their emotions go beyond normal, and there's a different type of emotion. So Norma has an emotional experience which is very healthy, very mentally healthy. She gets a little bit frustrated at times like this. But for everyone who comes to see me, they experience more intense reactions that last longer, and not just that, the type of emotions different. So they might be in waiting in the line and they don't feel mildly frustrated, they feel intensely frustrated. And that intense frustration lasts and lasts, but frustration isn't the only emotional experience. There are different types of emotional experience. They might feel angry and disgusted as well. And now what do we do now with the internet definition? We say the norm, you've got an emotional response, which is sort of a subjective internal experience to emotional events. But we say to that same, all of the people come to see me, oh yeah, well you've just got a internal experience, subjective internal experience in response to events that's around you. So, good luck. That doesn't help, does it? We need something richer, we need something deeper, because this definition is not enough if we're going to answer questions around this sort of thing. We go, what is that about? We need a way of conceptualizing emotions where we can go, hold on, we need to understand that better so we can reduce it to normal. Does that make sense? And this is where you guys have an advantage, a Christian advantage. This is part of your heritage. I'm going to encourage you to be proud of it because it's good, it's healthy. It revolves around this. It revolves around what is on your heart. Now, what is on your heart is what gives rise to all of your emotions. This is what my number two girl, she did this for me. What is on your heart is, well, your emotions are an expression of what's on your heart. See, what just happened is we had this definition of emotions, which doesn't really help us. It's what the internet says. Oh, it's just a subjective response to events that are around you. But that doesn't help us explain or resolve the intense emotions and the different types of emotions. But this will. This will take us a long way there. What is it? It's your heart. Seeing that your emotions come out of your heart. A lot of things come out of your heart. Your emotions, your behaviours, your physical reactions, your thoughts, they all flow out of your heart. Well, what is your heart? Your heart is not your mind. People who I've heard preachers who I respect and I'm very fond of talk about how your heart is synonymous with your mind. I cannot agree with that statement. The first time the word heart is used in the Bible is in Genesis 6, and it's used twice in the same verse. And it says, God saw that every thought in human mind, in the human heart, was wicked. It's the first time the word is used. But he doesn't say God saw that every thought in the human mind was wicked. He said God said that every thought in the human heart was wicked. It's a deep problem. It's a problem that relates not just to cognitions, but to inclinations, to will, to desires, to what people want. And in the very same verse, it says that God in his heart was troubled. He's grieving. God has a heart. God is grieving. It's emotional and it's deep and it's troubling for him. So our heart is not our mind. It is the seat of your psychological functioning. It is deep within us and it gives rise to emotions. Is it any wonder that you see here in this proverb that many of us see, Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard that. Guard your heart. Above all else. Above coffee? Are you serious? Above coffee? That's outrageous. Above all else, guard that part of your functioning. Why? Because everything you do flows from it. That's why. So if you really want to change your emotions now, what we're looking at is the need to address what's in the middle of it and what gives rise to it. This is the language of your heart, is your feelings. And it's universal across all cultures, across all age groups. That is the way you get to know someone at a heart level, is you ask them how they feel. If you don't want to get to know someone at a heart level, you ask them what they think. If you don't want to get to know someone at a heart level, you say, what have you been doing? But if you want to get to know them in a deeper way, you say, well, how have you been feeling lately? And you get different sorts of answers there. So we're here to talk about what's on your heart. The heart is the seat of your psychological functioning. It's where your feelings come from. But it's also where there sits this algorithm. If I do X, then I'll get fulfillment. And the reverse of that, which is if I don't do X, then I won't be fulfilled. And there are big consequences for that. Big consequences for our heart, because what's on your heart can rest a whole lot of negative experiences. Shame, betrayal, worthlessness, alienation, identity tags like I'm a loser or I'm disgusting, and of course hopelessness and despair. So who should we turn to remedy that sort of stuff? Because it's not sustainable for us to sit with that sort of stuff. We're going to turn to the woman at the well, as you may have guessed. Now, I don't know if you've had this experience of this passage, but this passage is just strange, anxiety-riddled passage full of competing agendas. It's like an arm wrestle. It goes back this way, it goes back the other way, and there's confusion between the two people in it. But it's just wonderful. It's just a breathtaking passage. I'll take you through it. I'll take you through parts of it. There's a really strange and fearful setting, verse 1 to 6. Then we're going to move to Jesus has a need and that he actually establishes, verses 7 to 9. And then the woman has a greater need, and Jesus establishes that, verses 10 to 14. And then the old requirements are destroyed and new requirements are brought in, or a new requirement is brought in, verses 15 to 26. So we're going to go through each of these in turn now. So the first thing is it's a very strange and fearful setting. What we understand is that Jesus is gone from Judea and he's going to Galilee. Why? Because apparently he's baptizing more people than John. Teach, teach, teach. Shouldn't do that. So he's actually trying to flee. So no doubt he has a little bit of anxiety in his system. Do you ever get anxious? Jesus himself gets anxious. You are part of God's own people. If you get anxious, welcome to being part of God's own community. He himself was like that. So he's a little bit anxious. He's fleeing people and he goes through Samaria. The curious thing is, well, I understand why he's going from Judea to Galilee, but why did he have to go through there? Because a lot of people, Jews in particular, would avoid going through there. So why did he go through there? Well, I think the answer to that is only half a chapter before the most famous verse in the whole Bible, John 3:16, it's a message for the world. And he's opening up this message for the world. And he deliberately goes into Samaria. And so he's feeling anxious. It's the middle of the day and he's tired and he's feeling thirsty. And along comes this lady in the middle of the day. And this is the strange thing. What are you doing in the middle of the day? Have you walked out to the Australian Outback in the middle of the day? I have. You wouldn't do it in the summertime, yeah? There's a strange thing happening here. She's coming there in the middle of the day. Perhaps she's avoiding people in the morning, other women in the morning, we don't know. Perhaps she was told to go out and get water in the middle of the day. We just don't know. But this is strange. And what's really strange is this. So we know that Jesus is feeling anxious and tired and thirsty, and along comes this woman, and she sees Jesus for who he is, a Jewish man, and she's a Samaritan. What's the issue here? She is effectively, for want of a better phrase, she's effectively a half-caste. She's born of Jewish and Assyrian descent. And Jews don't like her people, and her people don't like Jewish people. Well, frame it like this. Have you ever walked into a situation one-on-one and you couldn't avoid someone who you think could hate you? Or more particularly, I'll put it like this, to the women here. Have you ever come into contact with a man one-on-one, no one else around, and you think to yourself, this man might hate me or bring me harm or coerce me or ridicule me? That's what she is feeling. And immediately she goes into this situation, in this strange setting, and Jesus is the one who has the need. Verse 7, he says, will you give me a drink? And then she's shocked about why he is talking to her, which seems understandable now because these people don't like each other, these races don't like each other. And then she says, well, how can you even ask me? And then verse 10, Jesus has a need, but then verse 10, he establishes, no, you're the one who has the need. See the confusion? Like, it's quite clear visually that Jesus is the one. He doesn't have anything to bring up water. But then Jesus says, no, if you knew who it was who he was talking to, you would ask him for a drink. Now, this is getting confusing for her. And then we go to, then we move from the woman has, from into this situation where the woman has a greater need, and he explains it to her, but she doesn't quite get it. He says, the most baffling thing in all of this, he asks her a question that he already knows the answer to. Have you ever asked a question that you already know the answer to? Why would you do that? And a confusing thing, maybe if you've asked that question, maybe someone else has asked that question of you. They already know the answer, but they ask the question of you. Maybe Jesus is just showing off. Maybe Jesus Googled before he went, woman at the well. Oh my goodness, she goes at midday. Oh my goodness, 4 or 5 partners, whatever. Oh my goodness, now I know more than her. And then she arrives and goes, oh, I know more than you. Guess what? No Google. And but guess what also? That doesn't sit with his character. I can't think of any other verse in the gospel where it says, and Jesus showed off about how much he knew. It just doesn't fit with his character, does it? So why does he ask a question that he already knows the answer to? And I think it's because of this. He wants something to be acknowledged about something that's on her heart. If we go back to our definition, what's our definition of what's on the heart? If I get X, then I'll find deep fulfillment. And you can guess what's on her heart. If you had to say something to yourself now and you had to guess what's on her heart, what is her X? This is her previous requirement. This is what she thinks she had to do to get fulfillment. And my guess is that Jesus wanted her to talk about this, and this had to be mentioned because she's going to have her heart reconciled to him. What's her ex? At a guess, it's about having a man in her life, a man who will love her. And she's done this repeatedly. She's done it again and again and again, and it hasn't delivered. And that's exactly what Jesus is talking about in this passage. What you want and the strategy that you've been using is not working. And that's the predicament that she's in, and Jesus wants to show her that. Do you have an X? If I get X and I get deep fulfillment, if I get that house, if I get that degree, if my kids are well behaved for a change, if I earn that amount of money, if I get that car, if I'm the right height, if I'm the right weight, if I ship over the right amount of money back to my parents as they age, then I'll feel fulfilled, then I'll feel good enough, then I'll have value, then I'll have identity. If I have X, then I'll get fulfillment. We have our own X's, just like the woman at the well. Hers might be different than yours, but those things are going to have to go, and this is what the exchange is all about. Then lastly, what happens is the old requirements have to be destroyed and a new one is created. It's at verse 15. We're first moving forward to verse 21. Oh, actually, no, verse 19. Sir, the woman said, I can see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place we must worship is in Jerusalem. You see, this is what she is. She's quite a smart lady, and she understands Jewish practices. So she's feeding back to Jesus what is a Jewish practice, that we have to be in Jerusalem. But she knows that even if she went to Jerusalem, she wouldn't be allowed in there anyway because she's a Samaritan. So she's in the wrong geography and she's the wrong race. But not only that, she's the wrong gender as well. Wrong race, wrong gender, wrong geography. And what happens? Well, you can see it in the next verse. Woman, Jesus replies, this is 21, believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation comes from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. See, what's just happened is those three ancient requirements just wiped away. And the only new requirement is that you speak to him in spirit and in truth. have an authentic conversation about what's in your heart with Him. That's the only new requirement. What could you never conclude from reading this passage? Well, from reading this passage in John 4, you could never say, well, Jesus is not the only way. I was once watching a reality TV program and people were gathered around. It was a dinner party scene and there was a new convert there, a Christian convert, and he's explaining to all these people in the dinner party how much joy he has felt by coming to Christ and what a relief that is to come to Christ. And the lady next to him, somewhat condescendingly, said, yes, but that's not the only way to find some sort of fulfillment. Now, that's fine. I'm absolutely open to other people saying that they have lots of different ways of finding fulfillment. You just can't conclude that from this passage, can you? But there's other things that you can never conclude from this passage, which is there are still things that you need to do. That option isn't left open to her. See, at the end of the passage, she says, I know that the Messiah is coming and he'll explain everything to us. And then he says, well, I, the one speaking to you, I'm he, which means I just explained it to you. The only thing that needs to happen is that you have a conversation in love and in truth. Now, this promise is really extravagant. This promise is really big, that you would get life, living water, deep satisfaction that starts now. Now, I'm not saying every emotional condition has a spiritual solution. I'm not saying that every emotional condition is about the heart. There are things that happen in people's lives, like you can have a thyroid condition, for example, and that creates havoc with your mood. And it's really important to address that. You can have a psychiatric condition, or you can have a drug and alcohol problem, and that plays havoc with your mood. Not everything is about the heart, and not everything is about the spirit. I don't want to overstate the importance of these things, but I definitely don't want to understate the importance of these things either. You have within you a tremendous resource. And if you go into your heart and you turn towards Jesus in spirit and truth, that can really reform you as a person and reform your emotions. The promise is really big. And I want you to see that the character of Jesus. Can you imagine having a conversation with Jesus and you've found a brand new way? There's a new fad that swept right across South Brisbane, right? And people are finding such great spiritual fulfillment in it. And you found that new wave, that new fad. You find a conversation with Jesus. You sit down next to Jesus and say, oh, listen, there's this new trendy way. There's this fad. And I've found such great relief in it, such great spiritual fulfillment. Can you imagine Jesus saying, yeah, you're right. It is a better way than what I'm offering. It is better, but it's just not biblical. So I'm afraid we're just going to have to do the dour, sad, biblical way. If you find a better way than this, than John 4, then I think you should take it. And not only that, I think Jesus would say if you can find a better way, you should take it as well. It's not as if you come into this and you feel so much better and definitely. No, it starts now and it rises up into eternal life. But if you haven't found that spiritual nourishment, perhaps you could ask one of your friends after the service today if they've found that spiritual nourishment. So you can never say from this passage, Jesus is not the only way. You can never say from this passage that there are still things that you need to do. So what's on your heart? Your heart is the seat of your psychological functioning, but it's also where that algorithm is. If I get X, if I do X, then I'll find fulfillment. Who should you turn to? Jesus. I, the one I'm talking to, I'm he. And put in place a new requirement. Not replace the old one. If I have an X, then I'll find fulfillment, which is if I have Jesus, then I'll have living water. Why don't we leave it there? Thank you.